Welcome, everybody, to the Rob Zicari Show. It is Monday, January. What the hell is today? Like the 12th? I don't even know. I don't even know what the hell the exact date. The 11th. It's January 11th, 2016. And I think I'm officially being tortured today. Today's an official torture day of Rob Zicari to Rob Zicari Show. Because, as you know, David Bowie died last night. That's not the torture. I'm not a big David Bowie fan. Not at all. But my, I guess, neighbor... The studio that's next to me, they are so distraught of Bowie's death that they are jamming Bowie music that's bleeding through the studio walls, and I can hear it pulsating. And it's amusing because it starts at exactly the time that we do the show. So it's obvious that they are liberal douchebags. That's what happens. They listen to the program. They hear a conservative, and that upsets them. So in turn, I get inundated with douchebagness. So that is why I'm being tortured today. No other reason. Just let's torture Rob Zicari. So thought I'd announce that to all of you. Welcome. So when you're listening to the program and you're hearing a soundtrack, you will know why that is. All right, a lot to get to today. A lot to get to. The more information from the situation in Philly that, of course, state-run media, liberal media, does not want to discuss. They refuse to discuss it. This whole that's one topic. I'm doing a stop, pause, next topic. This Sean Penn situation, which is mind-blowing to me, this El Chapo Sean Penn situation, it's mind-blowing. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to new poll numbers, brand new poll numbers that have come out that show DT way ahead. DT way ahead. And actually leading Ted Cruz, Iowa. Remember, everybody's been going off this Iowa poll that has Ted Cruz a couple points ahead of Trump. But I guess a new poll came out today, or I should say two new polls that have Trump ahead of DT, or DT ahead of Cruz. So we'll get to that. I want to get to a, it's kind of funny, I want to get to a pop culture situation, which I don't normally break down a lot of pop culture-y things. That's something that our beautiful pop culture host, Kat Howe, does. But I saw a movie last night, and halfway through the film, it actually dawned on me why a political situation erupted from this director. And I went, I get it. So all of these things we're going to get to. And then, of course, we'll talk a little bit more on the Ted Cruz birther situation, which I love. I do. I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. I love it. It's fascinating to me. And then maybe we'll sprinkle in a little Jeffrey Epstein into the situation. That is a convicted pedophile who is also Bill Clinton and Alan Dershowitz. You all know big loudmouth lawyer Alan Dershowitz. It was their friend. They used to hang out with him, pal around with him. And I still think this is going to come out and be used, which it should be, against Hillary Clinton. So all of these things to get to. But first, I want to knock this pop culture story out of the way. Just because it was really fresh on my mind. So I went to see The Hateful Eight last night. I did. I went to see The Hateful Eight last night. I had to see it. I just had to see it. The new Tarantino movie. For the most part, every movie he does is pretty good. Even some of the produced ones with that Rodriguez guy that are entertaining. All right, they're entertaining. I like to go to the movies Sunday nights. That's what I like to do. I like to be entertained before we start the work week back up. So I went to see Hateful Eight. First off, the movie's almost 3 hours, way too long. Secondly, I went to see it at 10:30. So come, I don't know, 11:45, I'm fighting to keep my eyes open because the movie wasn't that good. It absolutely wasn't that good. If somebody came to me and said, should I go see it, I would say, save your money. Save the $9,000 that is going to cost to go to the film. Okay? Save the $9,000 it's going to cost. Because that's what it basically cost you now to go to a movie. It's about $9,000. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But anyways, now let me give you a little background on Tarantino. Now I'm a big Tarantino fan. Or I guess I was. Well, I guess you could still say. I mean, Res Dogs. Pulp Fiction, even Jackie Brown to a lesser extent. I thought phenomenal movies. And as far as Pulp Fiction, you almost can't get any better. I mean, it's right up there with classics like Godfather and Goodfellas. I mean, it started a movie revolution. It really did. Yeah, you know, regardless of the politics now involving Tarantino, it really did create a movie revolution as far as way pop culture was fused into the film and often imitated. You see TV shows and other movies with influences from Pulp Fiction. Anyways, one of the controversial things that Tarantino would do in his films would be using colorful language. And, of course, violent imagery. And I'm not talking about your slasher film. Oh, that's, you know, a dude running around with a chainsaw. I'm talking about people getting their faces blown off, brain matter, getting blasted on people's faces, that type of violence. Real graphic and done really well. Done really well, where you're not looking at a fake head, like obviously a fake head with the wispy wig hair. So from Res Dogs on, the violence and colorful language would always get raised. That bar would get raised. And Tarantino's favorite word. Now, on this show, we've used this word before in describing situations where people used the word. And I hate sounding like we are in grade school. I hate sounding like we are children by not using the word when we're discussing an issue around the word. I hate it. I despise it. I hate it. It's one thing to use the word in some type of derogatory use. It's one thing to use the word when you're trying to discuss an issue around the word. Do you get my point? You're probably saying, Rob, what are you talking about? What's the word? I am referring to the word nigger. Yes, I just said it. I did. I didn't use the N-word. I used nigger. There it is. Said it twice. Now, in Tarantino's movies, he would use this word. He would use this word. Some of the characters, rather you said, hey, they're racist or they're not racist, would use that word. And I'm not just talking about Samuel L. Jackson talking slang. I'm talking about a Harvey Keitel, a Tim Roth, discussing a situation and using that word. The scene in Pulp Fiction where they go to Jimmy's house, which is played by Quentin Tarantino, and he talks about signs in his yard that say dead nigger storage. So throughout the years, Tarantino would use this colorful language, if we can call it that. And people in the black community and be fair, people in the white community would oftentimes complain with Tarantino's use of the word nigger. Spike Lee has said different things about Tarantino's use. Other writers, they are on some PC blog like a BuzzFeed or a Huffington Post or the Daily Beast or Salon. Throughout the years, people that have brought up Tarantino's use of the word. Oftentimes, Tarantino got grief for using the word, glorifying the word, having characters use the word not as slang, but as feelings of hatred or feelings of racial bias. Now, this new film, Hateful Eight, comes out, and you haven't heard a single word about the use of the word nigger. Even though in my entire life of watching films, and I watch a lot of films, I've never, ever seen a movie where they use that word more than this Tarantino film, Hateful Eight. Never, ever in my life. And I'm talking about Roots, Mandingo, Color Purple, 12 Years a Slave, traditional slave-style movies in that era, The Patriot, where that word would be used, and to not use it in the context of the film would kind of be disingenuous. If you're making a period piece or you're making a movie about slavery, to not have that word used would kind of be wrong. It would be something obviously done because the filmmakers don't want to piss people off. So, in the history of me watching films, I've never seen a movie that has used that word more than The Hateful Eight. And I sat there and went, man, when Tarantino used the word in Pulp Fiction, he kind of got grief. When he used the word in Jackie Brown, he kind of got grief. When he's used that word in his films, he's had people like Spike Lee really make an point. He really made a point. He went out of his way to go after Tarantino, where Tarantino would actually have to have Samuel L. Jackson come to his defense. Not that he went, hey, Sam, will you do this? But Samuel L. Jackson, who's basically been in every single Tarantino movie ever made, with the exception, I think, of Inglourious Basterds, come to his defense and basically say Quentin is not a racist and he's not glorifying the word and so forth and so on. Now, I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking halfway through, after I've heard the word used already 15 times, how is it that no one said anything? And then I remembered. Tarantino was doing the Black Lives Matter march. Tarantino stood up in front of a crowd at a rally and called police officers murderers. And I always found it very bizarre that out of the blue, Tarantino would inject himself in a situation that he would just thrust himself in that role where he's never done anything like that before. It's like all of a sudden you hear all over the news, controversy erupts when a Hollywood director, Quentin Tarantino, and Tarantino lives out here by me. I'm not saying that they're hermits and they have to stay where they are, but I see him at the burger place 10 minutes away from my house. So to see him in a sea of black folk talking about cops being murderers and marching and doing the whole thing, I thought was strange. Because he's never done that stuff before. And this notion that police brutality or police singling out black folk is a new phenomenon is kind of novel, considering it's not. I mean, this goes back to Rodney King back in the 90s. So to see Tarantino marching and doing this whole Black Lives Matter protest was strange. But after I saw the movie Hateful Eight last night, I now understand why he did it. I understand why he did it. Think about it. Now, I know this is incredibly cynical. I know this is going to be very Alex Jones conspiratorial. But remember, especially with what we now know about this Sean Penn Chapo situation, these Hollywood elitists have a mindset that is very devious, very calculating. You remember the Sony hacking situation? You remember that? You remember all those emails that got leaked? You heard the way studio heads talked about everyone from the president of the United States to women. I mean, you know, they are not. They are not these sweet and cuddly Disney characters that we're all told they are. So at some point, somebody in the Tarantino camp, this is my theory, at some point, somebody in the Tarantino camp said to him, hey, listen. And he went, yeah? They said, this movie has the word nigger used about 78 times. You have every character calling Samuel L. Jackson a nigger. I mean, when Tarantino did Django, that was what really got the Spike Lee crowd nuts. When you hear Leo DiCaprio talking about the size of a black man's brain. When you hear Christoph Waltz, when you hear the characters using very derogative language, you kind of wince. You kind of go, ooh, ooh. And in The Hateful Eight, every single character calls Samuel L. Jackson at some point a nigger. To the point at the 2 hour and 25 minute mark, you just become numb. You do. You become numb. You literally think you're listening to a 5 minute rap song by Rick Ross. Or that DMX song that goes, my niggas, no, 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 you know, no, my niggas, no, 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 my niggas, no, 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 and you're just like, yep, my niggas, my nigga. No, 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 my nigga. That's what it was like. So this person had to have told Tarantino, listen, bro, in this climate where we are as a nation, with controversies like the Confederate flag, and other situations of political correctness, as far as who can use this word, who cannot use this word, what movie could depict certain things, who's allowed to depict certain things, you're going to get a world of crap. And Tarantino went, oh, no, What do I do? No. What's going on? And this person said, well, just do the oldest trick in the book. If you're doing a movie or writing a song that is seen as exploiting a situation or glorifying a situation, just donate money to a cause that is affiliated with that situation. So if you're doing a movie about the Vietnam War, or you're doing a movie about vets that come home with shell shock, and your movie is going to be controversial, people might take what you're doing the wrong way, donate to a bunch of veteran causes. Get out there and make sure you're the face of some type of charitable organization that is going to shed light on this situation. If you do that, people won't say you're exploiting. You're not making a movie to capitalize off of this tragic event. They all do it. They all do it. And Tarantino went, yeah, okay, yeah. All right. I know what I'll do. I know what I'll do. I'll get involved with the Black Lives Matter situation. How's that? And whoever's advising him went, yeah, that's a really good idea. And he went, ah, you know what? I know. I'll go to this rally they got going on and I'll march. And the advisor went, okay. Oh, all right. You're going to march? Yeah, I'll march and I'll do the thing, and I'll wear the shirts, and I'll march. Advisor, what? Oh, okay. So then all of a sudden, the advisor's watching TV. Again, I don't know what advisor it is. Agent, studio executive, maybe Harvey Weinstein himself. And all of a sudden, they click on the television, and there's Quentin Tarantino. Police officers are murderers. They're murderers. And the advisor went, oh, Jesus. Oh, this moron. Oh, what is he doing? The event got over. Tarantino called, what do you think? What do you think of it? And they went, you stupid mother effer. You just created a real problem, you stupid mother. What? I got it. Yeah, but you just took it. Jesus. What? Yeah, but now nobody could say that I'm racist. Look what I did. I got the police hating me. Hell, I got I got everybody hating me. Now no one could say that I'm racist. No one could say that my characters are racist. No one can say that I have a deep-rooted bigot inside. No one can say, oh, okay, great. You do realize that you're going to have a lot of people just not go see your film because they don't like what you said about cops. Yeah, but, you know, nobody's going to say that I'm racist. And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. You have not heard one person, not one person, say that the use of the word nigger was way too much in Hateful Eight. Nope. And if you compare Django, Pulp Fiction, Res Dogs, Jackie Brown, and how many times each of those movies used the word nigger, add them up, and it would still pale in comparison to how many times it was used in Hateful Eight. Think about it. You have students that are demanding statues of former presidents taken down because in certain situations, presidents overlooked policies that perpetuated segregation and things of that nature. Rather, it's Woodrow Wilson or it's old Confederate generals. In this day and age, you actually have protests over our history. Right or wrong, that's where we are as a society. But Tarantino's movie, The Hateful Eight, gets a pass. Even though it did 10 times. It did 10 times. As far as using the word nigger than Django did and Res Dogs and Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, and so forth and so on. And those movies came under fire. So it's obvious, in conclusion, that Quentin Tarantino really doesn't think cops are murderers. And he really doesn't care about Black Lives Matter. It was a really, really bad attempt at subterfuge, like Samuel L. Jackson, John Travolta shooting Marvin in the face and having to call the wolf in to line the back of the car with Aunt Jenny and Uncle Conrad's best linens so it didn't look like they shot someone in the face and had their brain splattered all over the interior. My opinion, for whatever it's worth, good or bad. And there is our pop culture segment of the day. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. I know. It was a quick change. And when we come back, let's talk about terrorism. Let's talk about terrorism and the fact that nobody in state-run media wants to call it what it is, which is terrorism. No one wants to talk about it. And it's pretty wild. Pretty wild. All right. It's Rob Zicari Show. We'll be right back after these words.
By the Republican presidential frontrunner right now, Donald Trump. Mr. Trump, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Good morning.
Let me ask you about these claims this way. You demand, and you've demanded of me, pinpoint accuracy when we report on things about you, including, for instance, your net worth. Why shouldn't we demand the same pinpoint accuracy in the claims that you make? Is it any hypocritical of you calling us out if we're not calling you out when you stray from the truth?
Well, now people have got my net worth right, and they're saying what my real net worth is for a long time. You know, as a private company, they weren't doing that, but now they're doing it largely, I guess, due to the big filing that I made with the federal government, with the FEC. As far as all of these claims, I believe that it's the Obama's intention. They said 10,000 people, Syrians. We don't want them because we don't know who they are, and I love the idea of building a safe zone someplace in Syria, but they said 10,000, and yet the Democratic debate, they said 65,000. $5,000 to the best of my recollection. Hillary said it, and so did Bernie Sanders. You're saying Bernie Sanders is so honest. I doubt that very much. But Bernie Sanders said it, and Hillary said it. I think they were talking in the Democrat debate. I think they were talking about $65,000. I have it upon a certain amount of knowledge. I'm very friendly with a lot of people on both sides, that Obama's plan is $200,000 to $250,000. So he said 10. The debate said 65 already, before we even start. And I think what he really has in mind is 200,000 people and maybe even more than that coming into our country. And we can't have it. We don't know who these people are. They're undocumented totally. And by the way, even if it's 10,000, we can't have it. We can't have people coming in that we know nothing about. There is no paperwork, and for good reason, but there's no paperwork. And this is going to be, or has the potential to be, one big fat Trojan horse. And we cannot have that, Jeff.
All right. Well, let's go back to let's back up here a minute. Let's go to this Jersey City comment. You said you saw this. Nobody can find evidence of this. And more importantly, the article that you tweeted out that says that this backed you up, that in itself, there were three or four different reports that month in New Jersey that said it was a myth that was spread, that it was a false rumor, FBI, you name it. Where did you see this?
Jack, I saw it on television. So did many other people. And many
Jersey
people,
City,
I've had hundreds.
You saw Jersey
in the area.
City.
I also heard Patterson. Excuse me.
Okay.
I've heard Jersey City. I've heard Patterson. It was 14 years ago. But I saw it on television. I saw clips. And so did many other people. And many people saw it in person. I've had hundreds of phone calls to the Trump Organization saying, we saw it. It was dancing in the streets. And by the way, the Washington Post, now he tried to pull back, but the Washington Post reported tailgate parties and reports of tailgate parties. Tailgate parties means like for a football game where you have hundreds and hundreds and maybe even thousands of people having tailgate parties. I saw it at the time. I stick by it.
All right, guys, we're back. I hope I didn't spend too much time on my Tarantino bit. I hope I didn't. If I did, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. All right, so listen. If you go to, let me give a little plug. Okay, let me give a little plug. Now I got that DMX song in my head now. Let me give another little plug. Ma Robbie. So if you go to the Twitter page of at Rob Zicari, we have a new story that is up. It's a pretty good story. And it's about what happened in Philly. Not a lot of detail because we didn't have the detail. But it's basically what transpired in Philly, what transpired over in Cologne, Germany. It's what transpired out here in California, not just San Bernardino, but the new arrests that were made in Sacramento and Houston, Texas, about individuals that were refugees and they were planning to help members of ISIS. The good article. Read the effing article, okay? Read the article. It's on my Twitter, at Rob Zicari. You could check it out. Or you can go to our news site, which is Zero Filtered. So again, at Rob Zicari and at Zero Filtered, you can check out the new article. And it's good. I promise you. You will be thoroughly entertained. So when we did that story, okay, the news was just breaking. And we didn't have all the details about what went down in Philly. Literally, a news conference was going on while our show was live. We saw video of the police officer getting ambushed by a guy that looked like a Muslim. The individual was wearing the traditional Muslim dress, the white Muslim dress. That's what I call it. I'm sure my Muslim friends, I don't have any Muslim friends. I'm just saying, if I did, I'm sure my Muslim friends would be upset by me saying their dress. But let's just say I had Muslim friends, and they weren't upset because I said the guy had a Muslim dress on. But the guy was wearing a Muslim dress and ran to the cop, fired his gun 14 or 15 times, and then ran away. He didn't kill the cop. And in turn, the cop got out of the car, bleeding all over the place, and shot the individual a bunch of times. Didn't kill him, but they apprehended him and brought him to the police station or hospital, then a police station. Now, right out of the gate, we were told this individual professed his allegiance to ISIS right out of the gate. We were told that this individual said, I did this for Allah. I did this for the Prophet Muhammad. So there was no speculation. There was no, oh, is this workplace violence? Right out of the gate, they knew. To the point where the Philly police chief during the press conference says, this man said he did it in the name of Islam and that he pledged his allegiance to ISIS. Right out of the gate. We knew it. And something kind of funny happened. the police chief tells us this. Okay. The police chief tells us this, and we're like, oh, it's cut and dry. And as the police chief says this, and then leaves the podium, the mayor of Philly, this Jim Kenney, says that it's not ISIS, it's not Islam, it's just some criminal with a gun. I kid you not. Never see it. Remember when Blasio came under fire months and months and months and months and months ago? Remember when Blasio came under fire and police officers weren't saluting Blasio at a couple of the funerals that were held that involved police officers? And it was a back and forth war of words, because basically the police in NYC felt Blasio threw him under the bus. Well, you want to see someone get thrown under the bus, you got to go and watch the footage. You got to go watch the footage of this Mayor Kenney going up to the podium right after the chief of police tells us, hey, the guy pledges allegiance to ISIS, the guy pledges allegiance to Islam, Allah, Muhammad. We know what he did. We know why he did it. And this Philly mayor just stands up and goes, the guy who shot the cop in the name of Islam has nothing to do with Islam. You're like, what? What just happened? What just happened? What just happened? That's weird. And then the mayor just went on. No one in this, in no way, shape, or form does anyone in this room believe that Islam or the teaching of Islam has anything to do with what you have seen on this screen, because he shows the video of the police officer being ambushed. It's terrible, and it does not represent the religion in any way, shape, or form, or any of its teachings. And this is a criminal with a stolen gun who tried to kill one of our officers. It has nothing to do with being a Muslim or following the Islamic faith. So you have the police chief saying, hey, this guy said he did this because of ISIS. He did this because he wanted to pledge his allegiance to ISIS. And as he gets off the stand or off the podium, you got this mayor saying, or completely throwing this police chief under the bus, saying, no, 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 no. No. No one in this room believes it has anything to do with Islam. No one in this literally, you're like, wow, what just happened? And of course, the mayor is a liberal. And for some reason, the liberal position when it comes to terrorism, when it comes to Islam, when it comes to Muslims, basically pretend it doesn't exist. Pretend it doesn't exist. It's bizarre. It really is. It's bizarre. And I think it's dangerous. I think it's dangerous. And it's really bizarre to watch the coverage. To watch the coverage on the different networks and how they frame the discussion when it comes to these situations. Or some of these networks, some of these talk shows don't even cover it. Listen, in that story that you could read today, we talk about how no one in the MSNBC lineup discussed what happened in Germany with all the illegals. That's what I call them. That's what I call them, but refugees. Okay. I call them illegals. Let's use the term that everybody wants to use. Refugees. The 1.1 million refugees that Angela Merkel has taken it. No one on MSNBC or CNN for that matter, whether it's Anderson Cooper, Don Lemon, talked about the refugee situation in Germany, where you had women being raped, being attacked, assaulted by anywhere, they say 100, anywhere between 50 to 100 refugees. And you never heard about it. Never heard about it on CNN or MSNBC. And if they did talk about it, it was very, very quick. And now reports are coming out that the media in Germany, go figure, downplayed and hid a lot of stuff because they didn't want the people to know what happened because it involved the refugees. And it would basically have people question bringing all these people in to Germany, United States, other countries, more than they are already questioning. So they hit it. I don't understand. I don't understand. Why? Why this constant protection? Why? What's the reason? What is the reason? So Germany tried to cover it up. And of course, over here, our state-run media tried to cover it up. Well, hell, they didn't try. They did. The only network that talked about it was Fox. The only network that had reporters there was Fox. The only network, the only shows that detailed what happened was Fox. It's amazing to watch the differences. You know, state-run media, comedians, your Comedy Centrals, state-run media. It's amazing to watch them characterize Fox as this right-wing lunatic fringe that does nothing but spread lies and tell everybody how horrible Democrats and Obama are. And listen, man, if you spend 15 minutes, just 15 minutes on each program, you will see that that is the furthest from the truth. Now, I'm not saying that Fox is perfect. I'm not saying that Fox doesn't play partisan games. I'm not saying that Fox doesn't play Republican establishment games. No. But as far as news and as far as stories that you won't get on Anderson Cooper or Don Lemon or Rachel Maddow or Lawrence O'Donnell. Head and shoulders above what went on in Germany, you could only get that situation and the details and who was involved and eyewitness account. You could only get that from Fox. Then you have to sit there when you see that type of situation happen and go, why is that? Why is that? Why would one network cover refugees raping women and attacking women over in Germany, and another network completely ignore it? Because that network is the arm. I mean, all these things point to what I've always said, state-run media. They are the arm of the Democrats. They are the arm of the Obama administration. And if they report on refugees raping women, then people in the United States would say, hey, if that's going on in Germany, why wouldn't that happen here in the United States? If you're taking a whole bunch of refugees, a whole bunch of people that are used to living their lives where they are segregated from women. I mean, think about it. You're talking about individuals that live their lives never seeing a woman's flesh. For all intents and purposes, you're dealing with people that come from areas where women are separated from the men. Women wear big black robes, sheets with their eyes, with eye holes cut out so they look like ghosts. And now these individuals get plucked out of that environment and they get dropped in a society where women don't dress like that. Women could dress any way they want. Some women dress more provocative than others. Some women wear long skirts. Some women wear short skirts. Some women wear baggy pants. Some women wear tight pants. Women are free to do what they want. And what happens? People go nuts. These refugees go nuts. Rather, it's a woman in long pants, a woman in short pants, a woman in a dress, a woman in overalls. Doesn't matter. If they could just see a little piece of skin, they could just see a forearm, they go nuts. They're used to seeing a black sheet with eyes. Do you realize that some countries, and I'm not joking, in some countries where they assimilate some of these people, they actually have to have courses where they have to teach these people how to act, and part of that course is a section on rape and the fact that rape is not allowed. It's not a positive thing in the West. These countries that take refugees in, some of these countries give courses where they teach these refugees that rape is bad. So, of course, state-run media here in the United States is not going to show everyone what goes on in Germany when they bring refugees in, because then people here will say, I don't want these savage animals around my kids. I don't want them anywhere near me. And again, let's face it, guys. Let's face it. When you live your life around women that are covered from head to toe in sheets with nothing but their little eyes sticking out, and you then live around women that look like they do in the West, it's a recipe for disaster. Think about this, all you guys. Remember what it was like when we were 12? Think about it. All you wanted to do all day is masturbate. All you would do all day is look for things to masturbate with. Pillows, fruit, dirty socks. Didn't matter. Anything to give a little friction was all good. And it didn't matter what you were looking at. JCPenney catalog, National Geographic, a Denise Austin workout show on ESPN. Didn't matter. Corey Everson. Didn't matter. Didn't matter. That was us. That was Americans when we were 12. Well, remember, we're constantly told that these people, these Muslims, cannot be told bad things about their religion. We're constantly told that if they see speeches by Donald Trump, or they hear radio programs like mine, where we talk negatively about Islam, it drives them to be terrorists. Remember, we're told that. It radicalizes them. It radicalizes them. So these people at the age of 20, 30, 40, have the mindset of a 12-year-old boy. Easily influenced and extremely horny. And when you hear what happened in Germany, you go, not in my country. Not in my country. And now they're doing it when you're talking about a Muslim walking up to a police officer and unloading 16 bullets into this young man. And you have people like Anderson Cooper. You have people like Chris Hayes, people like Rachel Maddow, that talk as if we don't know what happened. We don't know if the man was crazy because his mom said he had been talking to fantasy individuals, like hearing voices in his head, or if he was inspired by ISIS. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know. The police just told us. What do you mean you don't know, you moron? We don't know. Yeah, the police told us that the individual told them that he pledges allegiance to ISIS, but we don't know. We don't know. We can't go by what the police said. Because remember, we're the network that tells you that all police are liars, all police are scum, and you can't believe them. So we're not going to believe them when they tell us that the guy dressed in the Muslim dress who shot the cop 16 times and said he did it because of ISIS really did it because of ISIS. We don't know. We don't know. And you saw that on every single state-run media outlet. Cooper, Lemon, Blitzer, Maddow, especially Maddow. Maddow's the worst. Maddow is the biggest scum when it comes to promoting a extremist ideology when it comes to liberalism. Seriously, Rachel Maddow is the worst. She's the most dangerous. She's the most dangerous out of all the liberals. She's the most dangerous. I'm telling you guys, she's the most dangerous. You can't get any more dangerous as far as opinion news than Rachel Maddow. You can't. You can't get any. She has the most radical views. She creates a narrative that is extremely dishonest. She puts herself in a position that insulates her from any attack or anybody challenging her leftist propaganda, and it's dangerous. Very dangerous. She's a dangerous individual. She's dangerous. She was one of the leaders of trying to tell the people, I would say millions and millions, but she doesn't have that many people that watch that horrible show. But she's got a couple million. And telling them, oh, we don't know what happened with the guy in Philly. Who knows? Wolf Blitz, who knows? We don't know. Nope, we don't know. We don't know. Well, yeah, we do know. Yeah, we do know. Yes, we do know. The guy pledged his allegiance to ISIS. The guy told the police officers that he did it for Allah. And now, more details are coming out that say this guy, part of a bigger group. This guy had been practicing at a mosque in Philadelphia with other individuals. So when the police are told, I did this because of Allah, I did this because of Prophet Muhammad, I did this because of ISIS, and the police tell all of us, and the mayor tries to throw the police under the bus and use the Obama administration talking points. And then, of course, state-run media uses the Obama talking points. You now have more confirmation that this was not just some crazy guy that threw on a Muslim dress, went and got a stolen gun, which happened to be stolen from a police officer's house. And this guy just, you know, dressed up like a Muslim, told the police Muslim things, just so he could throw Muslims and Islam under the bus. Now we're finding out that this Archer guy was attending a mosque in Philadelphia. Man, from that mosque went to another mosque where he become more and more radicalized. Hooked up with other individuals where they could share different radical beliefs. And then, to top it all off, back in 2011 and 2012, this guy took trips to Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, that's what you call a mic drop. That's what you call a mic drop. When somebody dressed as a Muslim ambushes a police officer, stolen gun, shoots that police officer 15, 16 times, that individual gets arrested. That individual tells police that he did it because of ISIS. He did it because of Allah. He did it because of the Prophet Muhammad. He did it because of Islam. And then you find out that that individual is part of a bigger group, 3 to 4 other Muslims that practiced their beliefs at different mosques throughout Philly. And then this individual took trips a few years ago to Saudi Arabia and Egypt. And state-run media tells you they're not sure what caused this. We have to go by what the mayor of Philadelphia said, which is Islam had nothing to do with this. Being a Muslim had nothing to do with this. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a mic drop. You walk away when the facts are presented from the state-run media and the dangerous, dangerous leftist activists like Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes and Lawrence O'Donnell who tell you, don't worry, don't worry. Who knows why this kooky individual did what he did, but it had nothing to do with Islam. Mic drop. You walk over to them, you present them the facts, and then you just drop the mic and leave. It's time to wake up, people. It really is. It's time to wake up. And I know I've said this before, this show is really preaching to the choir. It's not like liberals are listening to this show. It's not like leftists are listening to this show, because they're not. They're not. They're absolutely not. So I'm basically preaching to conservatives. But if one, just one person can change their mind, like I did, then I feel I've done my job. I feel like this is a starving African child commercial. If I could just save one. If I could just save one. If I could just save one person who's starving for truth. One person that has been brainwashed and force-fed state-run media and extremists, liberal extremist propaganda. If I could just save one, then I did my job. Just one. Just one. And I hope this example fed just one person. It's the Rob Zicari Show. We'll be right back after these quick words.
Fight against ISIS front and center in my exclusive interview with President Obama yesterday. When we spoke in the cabinet room shortly before the strike, the president acknowledged how difficult it will be to eliminate the threat from that deadly terror group.
Even your friendly critics, Fareed Zakaria, says that what you have on the ground now is not going to be enough. Every couple of months, you're going to be faced with the same choice, yeah. Back down or double down.
I think what is true is that this has always been a multi-year project, precisely because the governance structures in the Sunni areas of Iraq are weak, and there are none in Syria. And we don't have ground forces there in sufficient numbers to simply march into Al-Raqqa and Syria and clean the whole place out. And as a consequence, we've always understood that our goal has to be militarily constraining ISIL's capabilities, cutting off their supply lines, cutting off their financing.
But ISIS is gaining strength, aren't they?
Well, I don't think they're gaining strength. What is true is that from the start, our goal has been first to contain, and we have contained them. They have not gained ground in Iraq, and in Syria, they'll come in, they'll leave, but you don't see the systematic march by ISIL across the terrain. What we have not yet been able to do is to completely decapitate their command and control structures. We've made some progress in trying to reduce the flow of foreign fighters, and part of our goal has to be to recruit more effective Sunni partners in Iraq to really go on offense rather than simply engage in defense.
So what do you think when you hear someone like Ben Carson get up in debate and say, hey, this would be easy. We can take ISIL out just by bombing their oil fields near Anbar. That's what the general told him.
Yeah. What I think is that he doesn't know much about it. And look, George, I think it's fair to say that
over the last several years,
I've had access to all the best military minds in the country and all the best.
Yeah, okay, great. All the best military minds in the country. Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's talk about another one of those. I am flabbergasted. This Sean Penn. Seriously, this Sean Penn and El Chapo situation. I'm amazed. I'm a loss for words. I really am. I get doing an interview or doing research on somebody that is a suspected criminal. And what I mean by that is, I get when John Travolta, I know, I know, or individuals like Travolta who go and interview Sammy the Bull Gravano. And what I mean by interview, try to kind of get in their head because they're working on a movie and they want to, you know, feel what that character felt. Or somebody sitting down with John Gotti before he died. I get it. You know? I get it. Here's the really messed up thing. Those mobsters were not on the run. Those mobsters were not on America's most wanted list. They were already in custody, or they were already standing trial. This El Chapo Guzman, an individual who is on America's Most Wanted. And I'm not talking about the TV show. I'm talking about the list where they have, you know, Bin Laden and then El Chapo Guzman. The leader of the Sinaloa drug cartel. You could go on LiveLeak or any of these other non-YouTube sites where they show graphic, horrible, just horrible videos of ISIS beheadings or Saudi Arabia beheadings. They have beheadings. But they have these drug cartel beheadings where individuals have been caught because they were stealing. And they're on camera. The members of the Sinaloa drug cartel saw their heads off right there on camera. This El Chapo escaped a Mexican prison with help of the Mexican government. Let's face it, people inside that government, people inside that prison helped. Helped this El Chapo escape. He's been on the run. And the United States was pissed off because we wanted him to be extradited to here so that he could do prison in one of our supermax facilities. By all accounts, this individual is responsible for importing all the heroin, methamphetamine,
In terms of Dr. Carson, you've said some of the questions about his past are fair. There have been a lot of questions about what really happened, what his childhood was like. You know, he's pushed back in the media. He said at the debate the other night, I have a problem with being lied about. Do you believe he's being truthful now you've heard his answers?
Well, I don't know. I mean, first of all, I like him. I get along with him very well. I just don't know. And don't forget, this is in his book. I'm not bringing up anything that's not in his book. And, you know, when he says he went after his mother and wanted to hit her in the head with a hammer, that bothers me. I mean, that's pretty bad. When he says he's pathological, and he says that in the book, I don't say that. And again, I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying anything other than pathological is a very serious disease. And he said he's pathological. Somebody said he has pathological disease. Other people said he said in the book, and I haven't seen it. I know it's in the book, that he's got a pathological temper or temperament. That's a big problem because you don't cure that. That's like, you know, I could say, they'd say you don't cure, as an example, child molester. You don't cure these people. You don't cure a child molester. There's no cure for it. Pathological, there's no cure for that. Now, I didn't say it. He said it in his book. So when I hear somebody's pathological, when somebody says, I went after my mother with, and he's saying it about himself,
yes,
with a hammer and hit her in the head, I say, whoa, I never did. You never did. I don't know anybody that ever did, personally. But that's a big statement. When he said he hit a friend of his in the face with a lock, with a padlock, yeah, right in the face, I say, whoa, that's pretty bad. And when he said he stabbed somebody with a knife but it hit a belt buckle, I know a lot about knives and belt buckles. Belt buckles aren't going to stop because they're going to turn, they're going to twist, they're going to, you know, they're not solid, especially if somebody's got a couple of extra pounds on. You know, they move. There's a lot of movement. So the chances of somebody going like that, hitting a belt buckle where it doesn't slide off and go into the...
So you're not satisfied yet.
Well, I just don't know. But when somebody said that he's pathological, you'll have to ask him that question. Look, I hope it's fine because I think it would be a shame. But think of it. What he's saying is these things happened. It would be nicer if he said, no, none of these things did happen. He's saying these things happened and therefore I have credibility. And what I'm saying is I'd rather have them if they didn't happen. I don't want somebody that hit somebody in the face really hard with a padlock. I don't want somebody that went after his mother with a hammer.
To be present.
I don't want somebody, frankly, I didn't read his book. But according to the book, he said he's pathological. That's a very serious